If you found this podcast, chances are you're a high achiever and you're successful. But now you're stuck and stressed, and you realize that everything you've created hasn't given you the fulfillment and the joy you thought it would. This is where we discuss the keys of high performance mindset and stepping into the next best version of yourself. Welcome to the Positive Persistence Podcast. Welcome to the Positive Persistence Podcast. And today we are joined by a coach, an advocate for relationship healing. He's turned his childhood trauma and rocky relationships into a powerful coaching practice called My Relationship Fail. He empowers us to foster healthier relationships with ourselves and others so we can overcome adversity and find the love and connection we deserve. Brian Power, welcome to the show.
Ian, thanks so much for having me, man. I'm excited to be here and share my story of, you know, how I went from some very challenging experiences to kind of overcoming them, and actually on a really great road today that's positive and things are pretty good. So happy to be here, man. You know, thanks for having me on the show. It's an honor.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's just dive into what you kind of were just talking about. You talk about a dysfunctional childhood and how it impacted your relationships. Can you share with us how those early experiences actually influenced your understanding of, I guess you could probably say, like, your understanding of love and connection with other people?
I was born in 1969. My mom was actually 20 when she had me, a week after she would turn 21. My brother was already around. He's a little over a year older than me. So, and shortly thereafter, my parents would divorce. My father battled addiction. Unfortunately, back in the day, really, you know, he struggled with that from his own dysfunctional parents and his, you know, childhood that was pretty difficult. My mom also had her own childhood that was very difficult. So here they are, two kids having kids and just hadn't really been able to figure themselves out yet. And Unfortunately, they struggled with that. So here it is, my mom, 21 years old, two kids, trying to figure this out, ex-husbands who's battling addiction. And, as a 21-year-old trying to, you know, find yourself alone, trying to pay the bills and everything else, you know, my mom's bandwidth was pretty short, you know, didn't have a whole lot of, you know, extra, you know, TLC time to really kind of, you know, work us, nurture us properly and kind of, you know, teach us how to be boys. And another thing of that was we moved around a lot. So the first 10 years of my life, you know, we moved from one town to the next. I went to a brand new school pretty much every year until I was in fifth grade. And so a lot of instability. You know, my father was in and out of my life. There would be times where he'd come in and I, you know, I was a daddy's boy. So when he was in my life, hey, daddy, daddy, daddy. But then all of a sudden, daddy'd be gone. And I would often have no idea why he was gone, right? So I developed a pretty hardcore abandonment wound from that, as well as other wounds, you know, things that were beginning to shape my mindset that would ultimately carry me into my adult life. And I was really just a wounded child as I grew up here, not knowing that, you know, how to do these things, how to have good relationships, how to, you know, have confidence. I didn't have confidence coming out of high school and all this other stuff. I didn't know who I was, didn't know what I wanted to do, had no idea how to do anything, and felt like just a wet noodle sometimes. You know, it was awful, right? So it just, you know, and that was kind of the way I kind of attacked it. But I knew that I, you know, wanted to figure this out. I struggled with trying to find the truth, trying to find answers. I battled my own depression for years. You know, ultimately kind of at one point, wanting to kind of, you know, not be around anymore. Right. But, by the grace of God, I wasn't able to kind of do that. And at that point, you know, I really feel like my life began to at least start to take shape. Once I realized that that wasn't an option, I was going to do everything I could to learn how to live and begin to kind of put this piece of the puzzles together and just figure it out as we went, and accept life on life's terms sometimes, even though the hardships were at times challenging. You know, I was very grateful for what I did have. You know, my mom was still in my life. I actually developed a relationship with my father later in life, you know, my early 20s before he passed away. He passed away when I was in my late 20s, but I was thankful to have a little bit of time to get to know him a little bit. And yeah, it was just challenging, you know, just challenging times and trying to figure this out. And all that stuff would affect my relationships, you know, number one, to myself, not knowing, you know, a lot about myself, not having that confidence, but then trying to have relationships with, you know, females and trying to be a good person, good partner, didn't really know how to do that. And so I struggled throughout my adult life, just trying to figure out how to be a good partner to a spouse. And ultimately, in 2024, my wife and I would really go from a pretty good relationship, you know, what I thought was a pretty good relationship, to a complete relationship fail, you know, where we went from, just being fairly good, but all of a sudden our childhood trauma, a lot of these things that were playing out, really caused us to kind of, you know, hit the rocks, if you will. And it was a crazy 2024. She came from a pretty dysfunctional family as well. And so both of us, you know, kind of had that trauma colliding, if you will, and it would make for a crazy, crazy year in 2024.
How long were you guys married before you had your relationship fail.
Yeah. So we were together like 9 years. I mean, so almost 9 years there at that point. My son at that point was 4.5 years old. I had a stepdaughter at the time. So she was like 12, you know, and yeah, we had been together for a long time. We loved each other. We had a lot of fun. There was no really major issues like infidelity or drug addiction or, you know, financial issues per se, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. We definitely had our differences on parenting. That was something that really caused a lot of problems. You know, when the COVID thing happened, we had some different opinions about some of the things that were going on in the world today and some of those things, but nothing major that really said, oh, this isn't going to work out. Like, we need to be apart, you know? But little by little, the traumas, little by little, the fights that we were having, we weren't able to really kind of work through those and solve them. We would just kind of fight for a little while. We'd kind of kiss and make up, but a lot of times they were just still there, you know? And so I think I call it death by a thousand paper cuts, you know, little by little, these little fights, these disagreements, these little arguments that, you know, we weren't actually solving. We were just kind of trying to figure it out, couldn't figure it out. So we just, you know, sweep it under the rug for a little while and then it would come back to get us again. Right. And so over time, I think that's what happens to a lot of relationships, right? It's just that constant frustration of it. It seems like we can't fix this. We don't know how to communicate properly. We're not problem solving together. And little by little, one person maybe hits the wall and finally says, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, next thing you know, it feels like the relationship's over. And it's not because you don't love each other. It's a lot of times it's just you don't have the tools. You don't have the know-how to solve these problems and really make this work in a way that both parties are happy and excited to continue to be in that relationship. I mean, it just sometimes becomes a little bit more frustrating, but I do think it's a lot of our own wounds and a lot of the subconscious behaviors that are playing out, and then just our inability to recognize that and have the tools necessary to actually move the needle in a positive way, you know?
Yeah. Talk to us more about the death by a million paper cuts, because I think I found that very interesting what you were saying, that as spouses, and speaking from my own relationship, from my own failed marriage, having those disagreements and kind of, like you said, kiss and make up, it's kind of, you're putting a Band-Aid on that, on the situation, and you move on, but you're not really getting down to the root cause of what pissed you off in the first place, which is most likely the behavior or the action of your spouse that made you upset. And I know for me, I made the mistake of, I guess, assuming that my ex-wife should have known that what she was doing was pissing me off, right? And then, so that made me mad, right? Sure. And I didn't want to address that. I wanted to address her behavior that made me upset. And then once we addressed that, we were able to, like you said, put the Band-Aid on it and move on. But then when the next thing popped up, it was like that undercurrent of the main issue was still there, and it was easily that Band-Aid came off real quick and a scab was picked and boom, now there's another problem. So how do we address the deeper issues with our partner, so those little, we'll call them skirmishes, don't blow up into wars?
Yeah. You know, I wish it was super simple to say a simple thing per se, but there's a few things that really need to go on. You need to understand, number one, yourself. Number two, like, what are your boundaries, right? Like, you know, is somebody crossing some boundaries, or have we established any boundaries, right? Have I said, hey, honey, this is something that's important to me. I need you to kind of work with me in this framework, right? And if I haven't done that, but they just continue to do things the way they think they're supposed to do them, and we haven't conveyed that, you know, we haven't talked about that, then how can I expect my partner to know? You said it very importantly, you expected or just thought that your partner would know. And so many of us assume that our partners have the same mindset that we do and the same way of processing and thinking that we do. Mm-hmm. And that's not the truth. That's where one of our biggest mistakes is, to assume that our partner thinks the same way and processes the same way. Right. So that's a huge awareness that we have to find. The other thing I find is we have to look at ourselves and not our partners as the reason this relationship is having problems, right? So just quick, my wife in the beginning of 2024, she challenged me to see a therapist because in her mind, she thought I had all the issues. And I said, fair enough, I'll see one. I'm happy to learn about myself and see if I can grow. But I also challenge you to see a therapist because in my mind, she was the one with all the issues. And so the first step, I think, to healing any of this is to take ownership of our own ship, you know, really kind of say, wait a second, how am I showing up? What can I be doing wrong here that actually could be hurting this relationship? And that was a huge one for both of us. We both realized, like, wow, wait a second. We both have some issues here going on, and we're both not really showing up properly. And that began a really good journey for us. communication is huge. You know, that was another big one. Communicating in a way that, you know, my wife would try to communicate to me before, and I was always listening to defend myself because I had these core wounds of abandonment, not good enough, all these little things that I had from my childhood. So anytime she would try to, you know, say something and try to approach me in a way that, you know, she had a different concept or different thought about things, I just felt like, you know, I'm listening to defend and tell her all the reasons she's wrong, right? Instead of being able to listen to understand her, really want to know this woman, understand her thoughts, her passion, her heart on this thing, rather than feeling like she's attacking me, right? So if she's my partner, she's not trying to attack me. She's trying to help the team get better, you know? And so that was a huge one now that I totally realized, like, you have to be partners and you have to be willing to listen to your partner and trust that your partner isn't there trying to say these things to hurt us. They're really trying to open our minds, our hearts, and share their side of things so that we can improve the team, if we will. So that's a huge one for me. Yeah, just a lot of those things. And then changing behaviors, changing some of the way we're just doing things. You know, my wife and I have some different ideas about life, and we do have some, and that sometimes is hard. But at the end of the day, we can talk about it. We can work through that. We can be honest about it. Then we can kind of understand each other better and see each other's perspective. Then we can have a lot more respect for each other, and not feel like attacked and not feel like, you know, you're dragging the team down, you know. But I think the first thing, honestly, is just self-awareness, is learning and pointing the finger at ourselves, taking ownership for our side of things. I always say how they act tells us everything about them. How we act tells them everything about us. And so I can't blame my partner for why I'm being a jerk. If I'm being a jerk, that's on me. I have to just claim that and say, okay, now I have to dig into that. Why am I acting this way? What has caused me to do that? I may have some wounds and some perceptions that aren't healthy that are causing me to do that. Right. Now I got to fix that and work on that so that I can show up in a better way. And now when I can do that, it's a game changer.
Yeah, that is so insightful, and it sounds simple enough, but not easy to do, right? And I know that that you help people learn from those failures, right? From their relationships. So how can individuals, I guess, reframe some of their past failures as opportunities now for that personal growth that they're looking for, that their current relationship may desperately need for it to move forward?
Yeah, I'm a big believer that unfortunately, sometimes we got to hit rock bottom for us to really be willing to learn, be open to new ideas, be willing to change the way we're doing things and have all this. And so that's why I call my practice My Relationship Fail. It's really about using failure to success and accepting that failure sometimes is that missing ingredient that we need to actually begin to heal, change, and actually launch us into something really great. It's nice when we don't have to get to that point, but I would say a big portion of us aren't that way. We're stubborn. We think everything's okay. And then boom, all of a sudden your spouse is leaving, you're headed towards divorce, and you're thinking, what is going on here? A lot of times that's when we're maybe a little bit more open to, like, okay, wait a second, looking at this. But I do believe that is an incredible opportunity to do just that. Turn the ship around. You know, the reason it's broken, now you've gotten to this point is because there were issues and you guys, for whatever reason, weren't able to kind of figure that out. And so again, death by a thousand paper cuts, you're at this critical stage. Now it's time to really take ownership, look at these things. And when you do that, the sky's the limit. Anything can come back around. Anything can, you know, change and make some new things. In my case, I was very lucky to where my wife and I were able to work it out and things came back around. But I had gotten to the point where I let it go. And even if it didn't come back around, I accepted that I was going to learn from this. I was going to grow from this. I was going to make this something really great. I always say they call it a breakup, not a breakdown, because we're going to use the breakup to level up. Okay. We can use it to break down. We can go that way. And if we choose that, then we're going to use this and it's going to be a bad experience. But if I can look at this and say, hey, this is an opportunity for me to learn, change, and launch me into something great, then let's take that opportunity and do that. And, you know, pain is a great motivator, you know, so when we're hurting and we're in that pain, that's often when we're willing to look at what's really going on, right? Okay. Because I may be, you know, people may be saying things along the way, but I'm not listening. I'm not believing that. Nah, you know what? Until again, things really get critical. Now I'm saying, well, okay, let's look at this. Let's figure this out. I don't want to be back here again. I want to learn from this and grow. And that's what happened to my wife and I. We were able to turn our horrible breakup and situation in 2024. We were both able to do the work, learn so much, grow so much, change, and then bring this back together. And now we have an incredible relationship that is 1,000 times better than what it was before. But it unfortunately, it takes some time, that critical stage, you know, hitting rock bottom.
Right. And I want to go back to something you said before, which I find so interesting, which it sent a light bulb off in my mind. And it's something that from this day forward, I'm really going to have to focus on using that as the lens to which I am viewing what is being said to me. You said that, you know, you were listening to defend. And, you know, instead of seeking first to understand, right, which is, you know, the better path, right. We do tend to listen to defend. Like, I am listening, and at the same time, I'm thinking about what I'm going to say back, because I can't wait to defend myself.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Which I think speaks to anger, frustration, resentment that we may have for our partner, for our spouse, either in that moment or maybe just in general, depending on the relationship quality.
Sure.
How do you, in that moment, like, separate yourself from the anger that may be boiling up inside as you hear your spouse telling you all the things that you either did wrong or what you didn't do right? Or how do you pause in that moment to say, okay, I need to be listening to understand where she's coming from or where he's coming from to better understand our situation?
Yeah, it takes some practice. Okay, it does take some practice. And first of all, it's the awareness. Number one, I always say never have, you know, serious conversations when you're in an emotionally triggered state. All right. So if I'm starting to feel that emotionally trigger coming on, I may ask my partner, hey, you know what? I want to hear what you have to say, but I'm noticing I'm not really, you know, there. I'm feeling it a little off. You know, can we revisit this later on or maybe even tomorrow, another day, and just convey that message to them? And if they say, yeah, okay, let's put this on the shelf, but make sure that you know, hey, I do want to hear this. I want to learn more. Right. And so then you can revisit this. And at that time, hopefully, again, keeping your cool, because once you start getting too emotional, that's a bad sign. Yeah. The other thing is healing the core wounds. All right. Because a lot of times, you know, that's what's going on, is your core wound is kind of being touched. And so as that person is speaking, that fear of abandonment, that fear of being alone, or fear of not being good enough, you know, you're hearing that little voice, you know, that little child, you know, looking up at the parent or somebody telling them, you're not good, you're wrong. And so you're looking up and thinking, no, I'm going to defend that. I'm going to tell you how I'm right. And that's just what's going on here. So subconsciously, we have to begin to change that so that we don't get into that triggered state. And now we can begin to have these conversations. Now, one of the tools that my wife and I do, and a practice that we do now, is we decide when we have a serious topic to discuss, we're going to give each other that time to talk. Now, I will let my wife talk for 5 or 10 minutes, completely uninterrupted. Even if I'm sitting there biting my tongue, you know, listening to her, but I'm also listening to understand her. Right. I'm not listening to feel. I know she's not attacking me. I know she's really not trying to hurt me. So if she's not trying to do that, then now I can listen to say, okay, what is she trying to convey? What is her point? What is her feelings on this? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're valid, right? Sometimes she may come up with a point that I didn't see that. I'm like, that's an interesting point. I never saw it that way. Wow. That's kind of great. And then when she's done, I can go for 5 or 10 minutes, share my thoughts and feelings on the same subject. Now she's listening to me to do the same thing, to understand me, to hear what I'm thinking about this. What are my thoughts? What do I really know about it? And then she can come across with some new ideas and thoughts. And now at the end of that conversation, we both feel a lot more heard. We feel a lot more understood. We may even be able to work on putting a plan together. Hey, based on what we're now learning from each other, this is what I think we should do. Oh yeah, I agree. Let's do that. And now we're coming and now we're working together as a team. We're like, wait a second. That is a much better way to kind of move the needle than just getting into these little heated disagreements and all. And now you're getting charged, and one thing leads to the next, and that now you're having a big argument. Now you know the other person shuts down for a day or two, 3 days, whatever it is, and it gets ugly, right? So when you do it this way, man, it is a game changer. But it does take some practice. All these things take a little bit of practice, but the more you do them, the more they become second nature, and you start to realize, wow, it actually works. Why wouldn't I want to do that? Do it that way, right? So the more you realize, wow, this is working. Hey, let's try that again, you know? And so that's all it takes. But it takes a little time and practice.
So it sounds to me, Brian, like a key part of the success here is just communication. Like straight up, you have to be able to communicate. And it's so funny. I won't talk about the relationship that I'm going to use as an example because of some people that I know. But when you say like you don't talk for a day or two, I just witnessed that with a couple that I know where one of them upset the other and it was the silent treatment.
Yes.
Right. And I know that I used to do the same thing in my relationship before with my ex-wife. Like we'd get in an argument, we'd be mad at, and we would just not talk to each other. You know, and like that does not help anything. Right.
Right.
Sometimes it just makes it worse. Right. Without that communication piece. And it's so important, I think. And I know that that you would agree with that being able to communicate with your spouse, even when you're upset with them, is paramount, right? Because if you stop that communication link, then there's no way to solve the problem.
So it's really on both sides on this thing, really. And some of this does come back to attachment styles and the way we kind of, again, process, right? So depend upon my wounds, you know, one person may feel that wound and they decide, hey, I'm just going to shut it down and, you know, hide and just deal with this on my own and process my emotions. And meanwhile, the other person is still looking for that connection, looking to kind of talk about this and work through this problem. And so the anxiety for them goes through the roof while the other person's feeling like, hey, I'm just shutting down. Right. They're not feeling any better. They're in a bad spot too, but that's just the way they do it. And so now that clash of the titans, if you will, begins to really take hold. And that's really what was happening to my wife and I, you know, and that's really what caused ultimately our problem and ultimately led to for her to get a restraining order against me because we had these fights over time and then the emotions came in and it just became stupid and ugly, if you will. Just so people know, the restraining order was all emotionally based. I never would threaten my wife physically, but it led to such emotional chaos that we couldn't even figure this out anymore. And it shut down and broke us up to thought it was all over. But I learned from that what's called attachment theory number one. So I learned the different attachment styles and how those play out. And that's something that you're just talking about. That's where those land a little bit. And then I learned something called integrated attachment theory, which is what helps us move into the healthier way of having these relationships. And that knowledge alone really began to, again, change the needle. When you're shut down and you're not talking to your spouse at all, yes, that's not a healthy thing either. But also being so anxious that we have to talk about it right now, that's also not healthy. So I do believe we have to say to each other, hey, I definitely want to talk about this. This is so important to me. I love you. But obviously, I think we're both maybe a little emotional right now. Let's talk about this at a time when we're able to sit down and relax a little bit better and we can actually kind of move the needle. Is that okay to do that? And say, okay, yeah, great. So it may take a day or two to kind of, you know, cool it down. But if in 2 days from now, you're able to sit down and have a real conversation about that and actually move the needle, that's a whole lot better than both sides, you know, one shutting down, the other one being anxious about it and getting into this little tiff of as to when we're going to have this conversation, right? That's just not healthy. So get yourself to emotionally regulated, but communicate that. Sometimes if somebody pulls away and they don't let their partner know that, then that, yes, can build the anxiety. And that's not fair either, right? So my wife would do that. She would stonewall, kind of shut it down. And that would leave me hanging like, oh my God, like the stress would start to come up. I want to talk about it. I want to get through this. Yeah. And it's really hard. It's really not fair on both sides. But communicate that. It's important. Get yourself to a regulated spot. The person who is a little bit more anxious, they're going to have to be a little bit more patient and say, okay, I need to breathe. I need to let my partner process. I need to get to that point. But knowing that my partner is going to come back around can give me a little bit more safer feeling rather than feeling like, oh, my partner's just so angry. You know, I may never talk to them again. You start getting all these, you know, thoughts in your head, which is awful. So communicate a little bit and know that you're going to be able to kind of come back around and do it at a better time and maybe do it like the way we just talked about, where now when we sit down, we can both look at each other, really give each other time, come from a point where, hey, we're a team. We're trying to help this team, you know, win the Super Bowl, if you will, right? So we want this to be the best situation possible. And the way to do that is to really listen to each other, hear each other, communicate. It's okay if we differ, you know, and sometimes we have these conversations and we even do it the good way. Doesn't mean we're going to come away with that problem solved that first time we do it. No, sometimes it's, hey, thank you for the information. We're going to process that. And maybe we need to come back in a couple of days or a week or so. And hey, let's talk about that again, because I've thought about what you were talking about. Right. And oh yeah, I thought about what you were talking about. Okay, let's revisit that. But now when we do it that way, again, little by little, we can actually begin to really problem solve together, move the needle, start to see success instead of having these, you know, feeling unheard, feeling totally misunderstood. And now we're frustrated and angry. And yeah, and now we're building that resentment towards our partner. And ultimately, again, these are the little things that do lead to divorces and breakups and stuff, where because we don't have that skill, you know?
It's time to ask yourself, when was the last time you prioritized you? Did you know that research shows that nearly 85% of high performers struggle to maintain a performance mindset while juggling the demands of work and personal life? Those who actively prioritize their performance mindset and personal growth are 30% more likely to achieve their goals in business and life. If you're feeling crippling stress and anxiety, or if you're feeling guilty when you take a moment for yourself, or if you're stuck in the grind and feeling burnt out, you're not alone. Many of us yearn for more, but struggle with the fear of being judged or feeling selfish. And you want to step into the next best version of yourself. That's why I created the Rinse Method. which got me from paraplegic to marathon runner. Backed by science-based proven strategies and now customized for high performers like you. If you're stuck and stressed and want clear steps that you can implement today to move forward, make sure you visit thepositivepersistence.com to download our free Rinse PDF.
Brian, how important is trust in this equation? Because what I'm hearing you say is that I believe in a healthy relationship that if we're upset with each other, two things need to be true. It's fine that I'm pissed at you and you're pissed at me. We're upset with each other. We're having a fight. But I also need to trust that I know that, okay, if you're the person that needs to that kind of stonewall, which that's me, and wants to shut it down, it's like done. My wife then needs to trust that, okay, I just need to let him, give him some space to cool off. But I trust that we're to come back to this and solve this problem. So is trust, like, is that super important in a relationship to be able to know that your partner is going to process and then we can come back to this instead of just letting it lie as it is and continue to build?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The first thing we always have to trust is ourselves in any situation and know that we're going to be okay regardless, right? So that's the first thing. But yes, as far as solving this problem, being able to work through that, trusting my partner and understanding, again, sometimes for me, I learned about dismissive avoidance and the way they process. And so when I was starting to learn that stuff, I could see my wife and I started to make sense. Oh, that's how my wife processes. She just does it differently. Whereas I want to process and connect and talk about it right now, she needs to shut it down, process it on her own, think through that thing and kind of go through there. But the key is to know, if I know that side, this is how my partner is. And then if my partner, again, can convey that, if you were able to say to your wife, hey, you know what? I'm not in a good spot emotionally on this. I'm not ready to talk about this because, again, I feel off. I feel dysregulated. Let me get to a regulated spot. And I definitely want to have this conversation with you. Obviously, you're my partner. I love you. And I look forward to this conversation. This just isn't a good time. Can we do this when I'm more regulated? That lets your partner go, oh, okay. He's communicating to me. He's not just shutting it down and then leaving me in the cold wondering. You're letting that partner know. And then when you do that and you come back and you have that conversation, oh, I see how that works. Next time it happens, you do it again. Oh, okay. I can now begin to feel confident that when my partner pulls away, it's not going to be 2 weeks of lack of communication. Maybe we can start doing it sooner too. Maybe, hey, my partner used to pull away and it was a week before we communicated. Now I see it. We're able to do it in 2 or 3 days. And then maybe after in time, hey, maybe shuts down only for a couple hours and we're able to get back to this conversation. So as we get better with it, that time in between also can sometimes, be less and really kind of helps each other. But yeah, trust is huge. You got to know, trust yourself, begin to understand the situation. And once you know that this is kind of the way it works, then you don't have to panic. You don't have to hit the panic button. I always talk about a mechanic, right? If your car is breaking down and you don't know how to fix it, you don't have the tools and you don't have the money to buy a new car, you start to panic, right? But if you were like, hey, you know what? I'm a mechanic. My car's breaking down. I have the tools in my shed. I got all the tools. I know exactly how to fix this thing. So if it breaks down, yeah, no worries. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to tinker with that thing and we're going to get this thing running again. Yeah. Do you think that mechanic is as stressed there? No, they're kind of confident. They're feeling comfortable and cool. Hey, it's not a big deal. The thing breaks down. We're good to go. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes the same thing. When things start to go south a little bit in our relationships, but we have the tools and we have the know-how a little bit, we can then relax a little bit more and trust the process and kind of go through that. And yeah, it helps a lot to know that, right?
Absolutely. And I have to pause here. And I hope that our listeners and viewers are having the epiphanies that I am having in this conversation. Like I'm having, aha, yes, that's me. That's what I do. That's how I deal. Like you just used a term I'd never heard before, dismissive avoidance. Mm. Wow, does that nails it for me. Mm. That's how I used to deal with situations in terms of disagreements, or I would not be listening to understand. I would be listening to defend, and then I would be just look. Okay, I'm done. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Yeah. Dismissive avoidance. That was me. Wow. Okay. So I want to come back to something that you touched on a little bit because I know that there are I believe pillars to this integrated attachment theory, which is it's fascinating to me. So I was hoping you could break that down for us. What it is, maybe talk about some of the pillars and then how they can actually help someone that is struggling in their relationship, who feels that they're stuck or like they're set back in their relationship and they want to move forward.
Yeah. So the six pillars are, for me, really, they were amazing and game changers for me. So they are as follows. Number one, it's going to be your core wounds. All right. And so that's the subconscious that's going on. One of the things you know, Tyce Gibson, who I learned from, she said this one day, she said 95 to 97% our actions are led by our subconscious, right? And so the subconscious is driving the bus. And the second part of that is the conscious cannot outwill or overpower the subconscious. And so, wow, when that was like a light bulb. So even though consciously I'm thinking I'm pretty cool, I'm comfortable, I've got all these answers, subconsciously I'm behaving in ways sometimes that aren't, you know, I don't even realize I'm doing it. And that's causing the problem. So we got to figure out what are those core wounds that are really kind of causing the problems there and begin to work on those. Number two, it's our needs. What are my true needs? How do I figure that out? How do I begin to fulfill my needs mostly on my own? Number three is our emotions. How do I gain control of my emotions, really begin to, you know, learn how to kind of, you know, handle those in a proper way? And then how do I learn from my emotions? Emotions are really just going to tell us what are my beliefs and my thoughts behind that. So belief leads to your thoughts lead to your emotions, and your emotions will lead to your actions. So we just have to backtrack that and say, okay, if I'm angry, why am I angry? What is the thought that I'm having about, you know, this situation that's causing me to be angry? What is my core belief about it that's causing me to be angry, right? Or if I'm afraid, I'm afraid. Well, if I'm afraid, what is my thought behind that? Well, I feel like they're, you know, that person doesn't love me. Okay, well, what is my belief? Well, my belief is I'm not unlovable. And so that's what's really causing my anger or fear now, right? So if I can start to learn that, then I can start to begin to move the needle and keep the emotions a little bit more at bay. Mm-hmm. Number four is boundaries. How do we set healthy, good boundaries, right? And then how do we convey those to our partner and verbalize those? So we can't just assume that our partner knows exactly what my boundaries are, right? I've got to talk right about that. I've got to say what they are. I always say boundaries are like the fence around the house, and we're the house. Right. So if there is no fence, there's no fence out there, then my house is unprotected. Right. But if there's a huge fence and the boundaries are too extreme, well, then nobody can get in and I'm going to live alone for the rest of my life. So how do I find out, how do I have those boundaries that are healthy, reasonable, that are good, healthy ones? And then how do I deal with that? Number five is our communication. We talked a little bit about that. I'm a big believer right that, you know, 90% of our problems, right, are just because we don't communicate properly. And I always say this, it's like we may be trying to say the same thing, but if I'm talking English and somebody else is talking Chinese, we just may never be able to understand each other. And so that's where we get frustrated, because we may be trying to say the same thing, but we're not speaking in each other's language. And we've got to figure that out and figure out a language that works. So now we can actually understand, comprehend, and move the needle. And last but not least is our behaviors. How do I change my behaviors on a regular basis, begin to do more healthy, good behaviors, and not let those, you know, unhealthy behaviors begin to, you know, affect our relationship? When you work on all six of those, it's a game changer, right? So think about that. If you could just move the needle a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there, all of a sudden you look back and realize, you know, 2 months, 3 months, 5 months later, wow, I'm doing things a lot differently than I did just a few months ago. And all of a sudden my spouse and I, things are moving along pretty good. This is starting to feel pretty good in this relationship. Mm-hmm. But without those skills, if you've never been taught that, how can you just assume you know those things?
Sure.
It's like saying if you were never taught mechanic school, you never went to mechanic school, how can you expect to know how to fix the car? You can't. Well, if you've never been to like school and on relationships, if you will, then how can you think that you know exactly how to do these things? And yes, there are some people that are very lucky. They have good parents. They figured it out. And those people, God bless them. But I really feel like most of us are not in that category. Most of us are going to fall into the unhealthy categories where we are struggling to understand these things and figuring out, and we don't have those tools. And that's just it. We don't have the tools. We don't have the know-how. But if we can get the tools and get the know-how, then I truly believe you can save any relationship. Any relationship can turn around. So long as the love is there, the compatibility and some of those factors, then yeah, absolutely. You know?
Right. You have talked about today emotional regulation, which I think that without that, you're never going to be able to have that cooler head prevails scenario, right? So how does emotional regulation actually factor into overcoming relationship challenges? And I guess the second part of that is like, what practical tips can you offer our listeners and our viewers to help them manage their emotions, to have that emotional regulation?
Yeah, emotional regulation is a great one. And you're right. Yeah, without that, it's very hard to kind of, you know, stay in control, and cooler heads don't prevail. And all of a sudden it ends into that chaos. So it's very important that we do that. For me, a quick tool is, you know, sometimes you start to feel you're getting a little dysregulated. Sometimes it's just best to say, hey, you know what? I'm starting to feel a little heated here. I'm feeling a little off. I'm going to put my shoes on and go for a walk around the block until I feel a little bit better. And just excuse yourself, remove yourself from that situation, whether it's yoga, whether it's meditation, prayer, walking, you know, whatever it takes, find something that works for you. And for me, it's walking. I can walk around the block for an hour, hour and a half sometimes, whatever it takes. And all of a sudden I will find myself from 1 minute to the next, all of a sudden I'll feel my body start to just start to relax. And all of a sudden I say, oh, wow, you know what? I feel pretty good now. And now I feel like I could go back in that house. If we need to have the conversation, I can do that. Right. So right. Just figure out that aspect of it. But to really begin to heal it, we have to start working on those core wounds. We have to begin to understand what's really being triggered there. What's the core belief that's causing the problem? And then, you know, as I begin to heal the core wounds, I will notice that my emotional triggers don't get as triggered as much. I'm not getting as upset with these little situations. And that will just begin to happen naturally, again, subconsciously, which is really what I want. I want it to just become second nature. And we can actually change, you know, the neural pathways and stuff. That's been scientifically proven. So certain exercises we can do to begin to heal those wounds and then just get that emotional regulation. That is, to me, the hugest part is healing the core wounds and then recognizing that as it begins to come up, you know, if my wife, if there's something going on here that's small, you know, something minor. I always use the example. Let's say my wife doesn't put the cup in the sink, right? And then she leaves it on the table. And I come in there and now I'm like, why? Nobody puts the cup in the sink. Why can't put it up? Now, the cup in the sink is minor, right? It's not a big deal. But what's really happening in my mind is I feel unheard. I feel unloved. I feel disrespected. I feel, you know, nobody cares. And so that's really what's being triggered. It's not the cup in the sink. That's easy. I can put the cup in the sink. It takes me 2 seconds. But those things are what's being triggered. And now I'm feeling the emotion rise to a point where, oh, now I want to explode. Okay, that's the time to say, okay, that's not okay. And the way we do it is we kind of have to ask ourselves, backtrack a little bit. Okay, I'm angry about this. Am I truly disrespected? You know, so that the thought, I feel disrespected. Does my wife disrespect me? Does she respect me or not? Well, yeah, no, she knows she respects me. You know, she respects me. I know she does, right? So, okay, so that's not the truth. Does she really not love me, right? So, you know, I said to backtrack that a little bit and start to think, what am I telling myself that's causing me to be elevated there? And then I can backtrack and start to uncover that core wound that's really kind of triggering this experience. And as I do that, then I can start to become aware. And then we can do some exercises that can begin to heal that. And little by little, the triggers become lessened and lessened. But just for simple ones, though, sometimes just putting your shoes on, get out the house, get away from the situation, and get yourself regulated. And find a tool like that can kind of get you there just for immediate, you know, regulation. But then long term, to heal it, we have to really begin to do the work.
So, I mean, it sounds like, and we've talked about this over and over in this conversation already, I believe, but self-awareness is so important. Yeah. Right. So you have to be able to step back and step away from the fray, as a former boss of mine used to say, and be aware of what's going on. Because God, how many times have I seen the proverbial, you know, cup on the sink and just been like, why can't you? Why is it, you know, and you're right. It's not the cup on the sink, man. Just put the freaking cup in the sink. Like, right. It takes two seconds. Like, what is really the stem root of the problem that is causing me to behave and feel that way? But
now on that real quick, Ian, real quick on that subject. So now instead of going to my wife and yelling and saying, hey, you never put the cup away. Can't you guys people? Now I can go to them and say, hey, you know what, guys? It really means a lot to me. I feel loved. I feel respected. I feel cherished. When you guys, you know, do put the cup away, when you do certain things for me, it really makes me feel great, you know? So when I approach it that way and communicate in a way that's a little bit more positive, chances are they're going to go, oh, you know what? I want Brian to feel good today. I want him to feel loved and respected. You know what? I'm going to put that cup away. I'm going to do this for him, knowing how good it makes him feel, rather than me attacking them for not being able to do what I think they should do and being true to what's really going on here, right? So that's just a little tip to say, okay, it's not to say like I shouldn't just communicate that the cup bothers me. I should. But I address it in a different way, in a healthier way, in a way that's saying, hey, I feel great. This is something, when you do X, it really makes me feel Y. And we kind of approach it in a little different way. That's more likely to move the needle, you know?
So we talked about that communication is important, but now we're talking about like the proper communication is important. So now we've highlighted the importance of it. Can you elaborate on, I guess, kind of the darker side of this? Can you elaborate on some other common communication barriers that we may have, so our listeners and viewers can maybe have that light bulb go off, like, oh yeah, I do that. I communicate like that. And that may be the problem. And it's not just the communication, but how I'm communicating.
Yeah, I mean, I think number one, you know, it's what we're saying, right? So I just kind of talked about it, right? If I'm yelling at my wife and saying, hey, you know, you never pick up the cup. Is that true that she never picks up the cup? No, she does. She'll pick up the cup, but maybe 10% of the time, 20% of the time, she doesn't, right? So, you know, we have to be careful how we're wording things. How am I approaching and communicating that? Am I communicating in a way that feels like I'm attacking them? Or am I communicating in a way that's just saying, hey, this is what, you know, I love. This is something that makes me feel better, you know, and when you do that, again, that's a big game changer. You know, I just think communication, it's a challenging one, right? But, mm-hmm. And then I just think, again, not communicating in the emotional state is huge, because you cannot have healthy communication when you're triggered. You are naturally going to want to go to that negative state. You're going to attack. You're going to do all that stuff. I just love the practice that my wife and I really come down to is just, again, sitting down, relaxing, not communicating in these heightened states. And yeah, I think a lot of people do that, you know, that emotional state. The other thing we do a lot of times, and for me, is I will repeat myself a lot because I feel misunderstood. So if I feel misunderstood, what do? I over explain it, right? I'm going to explain it 2-3 times. And my wife is like, okay, I already heard you. But in my childhood wound, I never felt understood. So now I repeat. So that's something I have to become aware of. Can I stop? Can I just communicate once? And then, you know, again, am I elevating my voice? Because if I feel unheard, what do I do? If I feel unheard, I'm going to start talking louder. You're going to hear me. You're going to hear me. And the less I feel like you hear, now I'm yelling because I just want to be heard. And so, again, those are just unhealthy patterns that we start to do that cause our partner to crawl up and say, hell no, I don't want to be around for this, you know? Yeah. So we just, yeah, those are not healthy ways to do it. We just have to get ourselves, again, emotionally regulated, recognize some of the ways we're doing this, find some balance, know that our partners are on our team, and then sit down face to face when we're both emotionally regulated, we're both open and willing, and shut off. Another thing is shut off all the TVs, shut off all the stuff around you. Okay, don't be having any serious conversations while you're vacuuming, you're watching TV. Oh, I'm listening to you. Yeah,
or sure. On your phone.
No, you're not. You're not listening.
Yeah.
When you want to have a serious conversation, right? How many of us do that, right? No. When it's time to talk, you look at your partner. This is important. We are going to look at each other. We are going to shut off all the distractions, and we're going to talk about this important stuff. I'm not talking about the little nuances. I'm talking about when things are serious. When you need to have a serious conversation about something, all the distractions go bye-bye. Just you and I. We're regulated emotionally. We're feeling good. We're on a team. Now let's talk about how we can fix this problem, right? And so those are some of the things I think that we can kind of start to become aware of, right? And start to recognize like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do it that way, you know?
Yeah, man. Brian, you have unpacked so much knowledge, and I feel like I should pay you for this session, because you brought something forward for me again. You talked about feeling unheard leads to over-explaining. I am an over-explainer. And it didn't make sense to me until I realized that, you know, I grew up in a house where my father was very, we'll say strict. And there wasn't a whole lot of emotional or even physical love from him. Sure. And it was more of a, you know, the child, as the only child, is meant to be seen, not heard.
Sure. Right?
It was like, I'm your father. This is the way it is. It doesn't matter what you think. And you need to do it this way. And so I realize that I grew up feeling unheard, and that's probably now why I over explain.
Yeah.
I'm a chronic over explainer.
you sound like you and I could understand each other a lot.
Yeah, but now I know why.
That also explains a lot to why you feel like more dismissive, avoidant, because your father kind of, you know, shut down your emotions, told you, you know, hey, it's not about what you think, it's about what I think, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And so you learned how to say, all right, emotions are bad, my thoughts are bad, I'm just going to isolate and listen to my dad and get through this. But at the end of the day, that didn't build that confidence, didn't let you feel heard, understood, share your emotions, any of that stuff, right? So yeah, just naturally that you fell into that pattern. But again, that pattern helped you survive childhood, which is great. That's what it was there for. Right. But now we're taking that into our adult lives with that same thought and that same unhealthy thinking and on the subconscious realm. And now we're implementing that into our relationships. And that could be with our spouse, our friends, our family, our coworkers. It's not necessarily just our spouse. We could be doing that with a lot of different relationships. And again, causing unhealthy situations just because, again, we learned some unhealthy patterns. So I'm glad I'm able to bring some awareness to you.
Yeah,
isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing when you start to like become aware of that? You're like, oh my God, light bulb moment just feels so good. It feels so good when the light bulbs go on.
Yeah. I mean, the premise of the core wound is that is real. That's strong.
Yeah.
So I want to, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on the show and taking some time out of your schedule to be on the podcast. But I want to give you a second to let our listeners and viewers know where they can find out more about Brian Power and My Relationship Fail. And so they can continue to get these knowledge bombs that you have been dropping today.
Awesome. No, thanks. Yeah. If anybody wants to learn more, you know, connect with me at all, please go to my website, myrelationshipfail.com. You can take the attachment style quiz there, learn what your attachment style is. I want to give you a free relationship strategy session. So you can sign up there. Let's connect. I'm happy to kind of give you a talk and let's see what's going on with you and see if we can, you know, help point you in the right direction there. A lot of times I will challenge people to join the personal development school, which is Thais Gibson School, from my website. When you join from my website, I'm going to also, again, give you a free session. I want to point you in the right direction on that. But when you join there, there is a treasure trove of videos, workbooks, a lot of great stuff that you can start to work on and really begin to move the needle. And if you feel like you want me as your coach, you want somebody in your corner to help move the needle a little bit faster, then absolutely we can talk about how I can help you with that as well. Last but not least, Ian, I'm super excited to let everybody know I'm going to be starting my own podcast next year as well called My Relationship Fail. I'm going to be talking with everyday people just like myself who went through these tough situations, learned from it, and actually grew. And now we're on the other side of that. Again, turning our breakups into breakthroughs. And I'll be talking with relationship specialists, coaches, some mental health therapists, and stuff like that. So just trying to continue this process, learning. I'm on a serious mission to help save as many relationships as I possibly can. Till the day I die, that's all I want to do. And I'm just hoping that you'll join me there and we can do this thing together.
Awesome. Well, Brian Power, thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to thank all of our listeners and viewers for joining us as well. And we'll wrap it up like we always do. Remember to stay positive, stay persistent, and know that mindset is everything. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of the Positive Persistence family. We're having a great time creating this content, and we truly hope it inspires you to embrace positivity and persistence in your own journey. If this podcast episode inspired you or entertained you, scroll down, hit those stars, and leave a comment or two. Your 5-star reviews and shares encourage us and help us grow the show. So until next time, stay positive, stay persistent, and remember, mindset is everything.